Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Brendan Prizman, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, Mod Pizza has been replaced. We've got the dish. A history class on the Hamilton musical takes the main stage. An unexpected group takes on a scriptwriting challenge. It's raining, but not men. Hallelujah. And this week's edition of Concert Countdown. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University's Lewis Hall, this is WNUR News at 6. Everyone's go-to Norris restaurant has changed from Mod to Forno's. Students react, and a pizza expert tells us why the flavors may have changed. Mariah Petway and Vidya Sridhar have the story.
The dinner rush at Norris University Center looks the same as always. Lively conversations are interspersed with the sizzles and clanks of cooking, while today's hit music blares overhead. But this year, there's one big change.
Forno's.
Forno Pizza Co. recently replaced Norris's iconic Mod Pizza location. The Northwestern exclusive stall now occupies the back right corner of the ground floor. Per the Daily Northwestern, Mod's contract with Compass Group, who oversees the university's food service, ended last summer. This prompted the change. So far, new students' reactions to Forno appear largely positive.
I find Forno's much better. I find the quality better. I find the quality of the dough and the ingredients better. I also find that they're better value it's better value for what you're paying. That said, that's probably because it's a meal exchange and it's already included.
That's Juan Sanchez Guerra, a first-year Wildcat who had also tried Mod before. Many new students also complimented Forno's large portion sizes and the variety of available toppings. But for sophomores like Gabrielle Rice, who have experienced both Mod and Forno at Norris, feelings are mixed.
I think I liked Mod better. I really liked the sauces.
How do you like Forno's in general?
I do like Forno's a lot. I like that the crust is a bit thicker, and I like that we can have two toppings.
She also says Forno may have more work to do if they want to satisfy every Wildcat's pie craze.
I think it would be nice if they brought some of the Mod sauces back, like the Sriracha.
Sriracha? What is that?
The Sriracha and Ranch mix sauce that Mod had.
We went searching for a pizza expert to tell us why the flavors changed. Award-winning pizza shop owner and director of operations at New York Brick Oven Company, Mark Costantillo, says the disappointment may have to do with students' taste buds.
I think the big problem with the students there is that they're used to one kind of pizza and then they get dumped another one.
The difference in flavor could also come down to the dough hydration, ingredients, and baking techniques.
The ingredients have definitely changed, I'm sure, because they probably don't know what Mod is using. They're probably using a different type of dough and a different hydration, which is the amount of water in the dough. And when you put all those things together, you know, different flour, some pizzerias will put like sugar in the flour and the sauce, you know?
He says that the temperature could also be a factor. Whatever the issue, Norris's pizza remains a hot topic, whether students still crave Mod or are warming up to Forno. From the halls of Norris, Mariah Petway and
Vidyut Sridhar,
WNUR News.
Northwestern students are putting on their historian's hat in a class all about the hit musical Hamilton. Through this course, they've discovered that Lin-Manuel Miranda's pop culture phenomenon might not exactly be an obedient servant to the real history of America's founding. Ella Alexander has the story.
History may have its eyes on us, but in Hamilton's America, a hit fall quarter history course here at Northwestern, students have their analytical eyes on Lin-Manuel Miranda's hit musical. This trailblazing class uses songs from Hamilton as teaching materials on the early history of the United States. Here's Professor Fitz with more details.
Whenever I'm commenting on a specific part of the musical, I try to play it and, you know, then step back and say, okay, what does this get right? What's accurate here? What's it include? And what is it maybe not talking about or putting a spin on? And so we try to toggle back and forth between what the show actually depicts and what the history tells us.
In the last 10 years, Hamilton has been praised for its seamless blend of hip-hop and history, becoming a pop culture staple. However, students such as freshman Michael Faraday have found that there are some aspects of Hamilton's history that the musical didn't necessarily get right.
And then we, in our readings, like, we kind of learn that people have had a lot of critiques over Hamilton and how it doesn't portray slavery as much as it should. And we also talk about, you know, was Lynn being entirely historically accurate? And we talk about, you know, feminism and all these, you know, critical commentaries of Hamilton. And what's just been, like, the most unexpected thing for me is, like, I just thought everyone loved it. And I didn't really think about how, you know, there were other sides and other beliefs on the musicals.
Before Lin-Manuel Miranda popularized the story of Hamilton, Ron Chernow, a historian and author, wrote a book revealing the history of the Founding Father. This book, titled Alexander Hamilton, became Miranda's encyclopedia for all things Hamilton. In Hamilton's America, students too read Chernow's book to better understand the history. Then, they get to analyze the musical's creative choices and Miranda's unique interpretation of the Revolutionary era in the classroom. After reading Chernow's book, freshman Haley Conroy has noticed that Lin-Manuel Miranda's Hamilton has quite a few differences from the readings.
So I think what's interesting for me, or thought-provoking, I suppose, is is seeing how there are some kind of glaring incongruities in between those, and does it say something about the way, you know, Miranda is trying to portray Hamilton? Is it strategic, or is, you know, stuff like that, I think is really important. And you can't hold him to a complete historian's perspective, but it's interesting to kind of see the intersection of history and art, I think, for me.
After all the reading and analyzing is over, singing, dancing, and songwriting will take center stage. At the end of the quarter, students will get to create their own musical interpretations of Hamilton's history.
So the more we think about the broader story of the revolution and the founding moment, the more we're able to look at what we do see on stage in the musical as a set of choices that Lin-Manuel Miranda and the rest of the creators made. And then we can start to envision what other choices might they have made? What other musicals or works of art might we be able to imagine on the revolution and the founding era? And that's actually one of the assignments for the class, is to create what I think we call the Lost Hamilton track, which is students have the opportunity to write the lyrics to a song, or some of them even write the music to the song that they think should have been included in the show. So they start to think about other ways that the story could have been told.
For like our final project, we have to write like the forgotten song from Hamilton. So we have to like make and record, and I think for extra credit, you could even perform it in front of the class, but like your own Hamilton song, which like just sounds like so fun.
In the 10-year anniversary of the musical and soon to be 250th anniversary of the United States, Fitz believes the subject couldn't be more relevant.
I think we're really looking at how our national past informs our national present, and thinking, especially as we approach the nation's 250th, about why so many groups across the political spectrum are so interested in this founding moment, and sometimes employ this founding moment for, you know, modern day ends. And so I'd really like students to come away with an appreciation of the difference between history and memory. So history being our methodologically informed, evidence-based accounts of what happened, and memory being the way that people today imagine the past.
For WNUR News, I'm Ella Alexander.
This Evanston scriptwriting competition puts 50-year-old women and older in the spotlight. And no, not just to play the old maid. Reporter Georgia Kerrigan talked to past winners ahead of this year's submission cycle.
When men in Hollywood hit 50 years old, they might earn the title Silver Fox for aging like fine wine. But when women in Hollywood reach the big 5-0, well, they're likely not in Hollywood anymore. Characters aged 50 and older make up less than a quarter of all television and film roles. And from that already small pool of 50-plus-year-old characters, only one in every four is a woman. That's all according to a study published in 2020 by the Gina Davis Institute, a nonprofit that analyzes media representation. And women characters over age 50 don't just get marginal screen time. Often, their story arcs, if they can even be considered arcs, are meaningless or stereotypical.
The mother-in-law that everybody hates, or the grandmother that's crazy, or, you know, the mother-in-law who's got dementia.
That was Angela Allen. She coordinates community-based arts programming for the city of Evanston. And she's witnessed these stats about media representation for older women firsthand.
And I've been hearing from colleagues that essentially they're being forced into retirement because there were no good roles for women. There are very few roles for women over 50.
And when roles were available?
And a lot of times they're like, you know, 35 can play 50. Well, that's no fair. Get a 50-year-old.
So in 2022, she started the Old Lady Project, a competition that calls for scripts featuring nuanced female-identifying characters who are 50 years or older.
We look for characters that are fully fleshed out and who go through some kind of a change. I also tend to look for characters who are not just buffeted about by circumstance, that they have some agency.
In its first year, the Old Lady Project received over 600 script submissions from 33 countries. Scripts are judged by a panel of actors, producers, and theater lovers from all over the country. Then, the winning submissions are performed in a staged reading at the Noyes Cultural Arts Center in Evanston. Charles Hertz is one of the three winners from last year's competition. Like Alan, he's seen his talented women colleagues struggle to find authentic roles for their age. Hertz says he applauds the Old Lady Project for challenging writers to tell inclusive and representative stories.
Honestly, it's my honor to know and work with those people, and I do feel that I need to keep them, you know, in my thoughts whenever I'm writing.
Hertz's play features two co-workers whose decades-long friendship is suddenly challenged by retirement. According to Allen, scripts about female friendships are one of the most common, and often the most compelling, entries.
I'm a playwright who got started late-ish in life, and now I'm just trying to make the best of that I can with the time I have left to me.
That's Ellen Abrams, another one of last year's winners. Her play? A pantomime ping-pong game between two senior center residents bonding over the afterlife and Frank Sinatra. Abrams has long noticed the lack of stories told by and about older women. So she tries to remedy the gap herself with complex characters that don't rely on typical old lady tropes.
Normal women, but older, but they still have lives. They still have valuable lives, and they're still amusing, and they can joke with one another, and they enjoy life, and they're still trying to live their lives for as long as they can with as good health as they possibly can.
Allen says this authentic portrayal of age is largely taboo, both on stage and on screen.
Well, you know, we live in a culture that denies that you're going to get old. What is a true representation of what it is to age? What are your concerns? What are the most important things to you? I mean, yeah, there's aspects that, yeah, when you get to be a certain age, your friends are dying. Like, that's not a story that's told.
But she says these stories need to be told because everyone deserves to see themselves equally represented in the media. Here's Hertz again.
It is just such older women who are incredibly significant to most of us. So I think it's very important that such women get their due representation in the art that we create.
This year, the Old Lady Project will accept submissions from November 3rd to December 15th. In April, the winning scripts will be cast and performed. And finally, these characters won't be played by 30-year-olds.
And that's what you hope to find, like actors who get you and you who get them.
For WNUR News, I'm Georgia Kerrigan.
A cold, wet system is moving through the surrounding area of Lake Michigan today, bringing chilly temperatures and steady rain across the region. Here's Neha Yadavali with Fair Weather Friends.
Hi, I'm Neha Yadavali. Welcome back to Fair Weather Friends. Each week, we give you a peek into the local and national weather so you can weather any storm with a smile. It's shaping up to be a classic mid-October weekend. For Friday, we can expect weather that is breezy and warm with a high around 74, starting cloudy but clearing up in the afternoon. With winds from the south at 15 miles per hour, your hair might get messed up. Do consider a hat. Saturday is when things cool off a bit, topping out near 69 with a couple of showers and maybe a thunderstorm. Really, it will feel around 66. Not too chilly, but keep that umbrella handy or risk feeling a little damp. Sunday is when the real cold moves in, only 61 for the high, 48 at night, and gusty northwest winds up to 22 miles per hour. A few morning sprinkles, then mostly cloudy skies. So yes, it's sweater weather, but maybe hold that scarf until Sunday's wind. While we're cooling down up here, the south is heating up meteorologically. According to meteorologist Sven Sundgaard, America's second severe weather season is about to kick off. As autumn brings the cooler air from the north, it clashes with warm, moist air from the Gulf, which creates thunder and lightning. This weekend, the same front that's cooling us off will fire up storms across Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas, where there's already a slight risk for severe weather. The good news, many areas could use the rain after a dry spell. Looks like fall's not just bringing the leaves down, it's trying to bring the houses down too. That's all for this week's edition of Fair Weather Friends. Thank you for tuning in. All in all, the temperatures are dropping. Stay inside, go outside, it'll probably change anyway. In Evanston, Illinois, Neha Yadavali, WNUR News.
Fall is in full swing. And so are the Evanston and Chicago live music scenes. Krishna Kumar has the scoop on the hottest shows for the upcoming week.
Welcome to Concert Countdown, WNR News' comprehensive guide to upcoming shows in the Evanston and Chicago area. From Evanston Space to Bottom Lounge and more, if you're looking to see some live music this week, you've come to the right place. Starting off local, Sean Phillips is performing in Evanston. This Monday, October 20th, famed singer-songwriter and virtuoso guitarist Sean Phillips will be stopping by Evanston Space on his latest world tour. He is known not only for being the man who first taught Joni Mitchell guitar and George Harrison sitar, but also for his Story 12-album discography. Phillips' performance includes some of his many hits across his five-decade career, all backed up by a live band. Doors open at 6:30 p.m., and tickets begin at $27.27 for standing room and $33.90 for seated general admission. Coming up in Chicago, we've narrowed our selection down to performances from Neon Trees, Stand Atlantic, and Sir Chloe. Also on Monday, indie rock outfit Neon Trees will be at House of Blues in River North, performing their most recent album, Sink Your Teeth. Known for hits like Animal and Everybody Talks, their unique strain of pop punk, featuring catchy production and introspective lyrics, has captivated global audiences, from their hometown of Provo, Utah to beyond. Tickets start at $25 and doors open at 6 p.m. Stand Atlantic, another highly influential pop-punk band of the 2010s, is also coming to Chicago next week. Drop by Bottom Lounge in the West Loop on Wednesday, October 22nd, to see them perform their latest and heaviest album yet, Was Here, released last year to critical acclaim. Doors open at 7 p.m., and general admission tickets are $33.42. Finally, on Thursday, October 23rd, Susie Clue opens for Sir Chloe at the Vic Theater in Lakeview. After their breakout album, Party Favors, in 2020, Sir Chloe garnered major attention for their enchanting production and lyricism, stylistic depth, and singer Dana Foote's commanding vocal presence. The band's Chicago stop on their The Forgiving Tour will have doors opening at 6:30 p.m. and general admission tickets beginning at $34.85. Next, looking all the way ahead to 2026, Joyce Manor just announced a North American tour. California band Joyce Manor, whose Midwest emo-tinged pop punk has drawn widespread praise, will be touring their upcoming album, I Used to Go to This Bar, next year. They will be performing in Chicago on March 28th at the Salt Shed in River North. That's all we've got for you this week. Tune in next Friday to find out about more concerts happening near you. For WNUR News, I'm Krishna Kumar.
Now, for a brief look at the forecast. Parents Weekend will bring stormy skies to Evanston, with an 88% chance of rain on Saturday and a 71% chance of rain on Sunday. The Saturday storms will also bring a little taste of winter, with lows on Sunday and Monday dipping into the 40s. And get your thicker jackets ready. The high on Tuesday will only be a brisk 54 degrees. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. ICE is not welcome in Evanston, Mayor Daniel Biss said in an email to residents on Friday. On Thursday morning, at least one person in Evanston was detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Biss's message also included recommendations on how residents should act and who to contact if they witness any further activity from ICE in the area. In Chicago, another No Kings protest is planned for Saturday afternoon, followed by a march. The protest will take place in Grant Park, and thousands of people are expected to attend. Organizers have said the protest will go forward no matter how bad the storms on Saturday get. In national news, Donald Trump has commuted the prison sentence of former U.S. Representative George Santos. Santos is currently serving over 7 years in federal prison after pleading guilty to charges of fraud and identity theft. It is unclear as of this point when exactly Santos will be released, but he is technically eligible to run for elected office again, if he so chooses. In international news, Britain's Prince Andrew announced today that he would officially give up his title as the Duke of York. The son of Queen Elizabeth has been mired in scandal for years, thanks to his links to Jeffrey Epstein and business dealings with an alleged Chinese spy. Andrew denies all the allegations against himself, but was stripped of his royal patronages in 2022 after facing allegations of sexual misconduct. 67% of Britons support the decision to strip him of his title as Duke of York, the first time that's happened in centuries. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on Twitter or X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 89.3893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Georgia Kerrigan, and our reporters are Mariah Petway, Vidya Shridhar, Ella Alexander, Georgia Kerrigan, Neha Yadavali, and Krishna Kumar. I have been Brendan Prizman, taking you through this edition of WNUR News at 6. Make sure to tune in for our next newscast on Monday, October 20th. Now, back to scheduled programming.